Court will proceed to the fifth case, Teamsters versus Troja. To Wellington. Wellington, excuse me.
May it please the court, my name is James Wellington for the Teamsters. This case presents a issue which I believe is important to labor relations and arbitration under collective bargaining agreements nationwide. And our position here, again, is that the district court has subject matter jurisdiction to enforce those provisions of the collective bargaining agreement between the parties that provide for an arbitration subpoena of Mr. Dennis M. Troja and JHT Holdings, Inc., pursuant to Section 301 of the Labor Management Relations Act and the federal question subject matter jurisdiction of the court under Title 28. The contract at issue is a multi-employer, multi-union collective bargaining agreement covering essentially the 48 United States. The employers employ employees within the multi-employer bargaining unit that engage in the service of moving new and sometimes used motor vehicles from manufacturers' facilities to dealerships for retail distribution. The particular grievance underlying this matter involved an operation in Garland, Texas, near Dallas, where the signatory employer, Active Transportation, maintained a contract with the manufacturer, Navistar International Trucks, to provide distribution services from the Garland plant. In the late summer of 2001, the local union was notified that the employer was closing its operation. The union subsequently found out that a commonly owned, and the union contends commonly controlled, corporation had essentially entered into a new contract with the manufacturer for the distribution of the work. A grievance was filed. And under the collective bargaining agreement, and the particular parts are outlined in our brief and also in the separate appendix that we have and attached to the complaint, provides for not only commitments by the signatory employers as to preservation of work and prevents diversion and also circumvention of the work preservation commitment. It also provides fairly detailed dispute resolution process. In this particular case, the parties engaged a three-member panel of arbitration, board of arbitration. The neutral arbitrator was Mr. Donald Peterson from Chicago, Illinois, as a professional arbitrator. Under our system, we have a union panel member and an employer panel member, and those three sit. The issue at hand here involved a request for information by the local union to the signatory employer and to what the union knew from past dealings, particularly in the negotiation of this contract, the owner of the signatory company and a related company. The subpoena was submitted under the terms of the collective bargaining agreement, paragraph 8 particularly, that provided for a procedure that the parties had agreed to. And it also provided that the board of arbitration, a majority decision of the board of arbitration, could issue a subpoena for information, for appearance at the hearings, for the parent, the employer, and the union, and also any other person or entity. That subpoena was issued by Mr. Peterson with the concurrence of the union board member. That subpoena, there's no doubt, was properly served in January of 2002. The parties convened their initial arbitration session in Dallas, Texas. The case continued for 2 days of evidence. Mr. Troja and the JHT organization, no representative appeared to present detailed information that was necessary for Arbitrator Peterson. The board adjourned, reconvened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, essentially to be nearer to Mr. Troja and his records. By the board convened in May, about May 21st, 2nd, and 3rd of 2002. The union sought enforcement as the parties had laid out in their collective bargaining agreement in United States District Court in Milwaukee. Judge Randall was assigned the case. The case initially was submitted, and Judge Randall entered the plaintiff's prepared order. There was a subsequent hearing of the arbitration board, frankly, that is referenced in our short appendix attached to our main brief, where the arbitrator acknowledged that the union had complied with the provisions of the collective bargaining agreement, and Mr. Trohal or no representative had appeared. The court subsequently, when opposing counsel got involved, subsequently vacated that order and asked for briefing, and as set out in the judge's order of July 17, 2002, essentially makes a finding relying on this court's opinion in Loss versus Blankenship. Now, Loss versus Blankenship is a case that involved whether the claim, a state law claim of tortious interference of a collective bargaining agreement, could proceed under federal jurisdiction of Section 301. And the holding is fairly narrow, and it addresses whether a state law claim can proceed. And the court in Blankenship said because the party, who in that case was an attorney representing an employer, he was not a signatory to the agreement, therefore there was no jurisdiction for that state law claim, or no claim to be made. And I think that's important in this particular case. We contend that the arbitration subpoena is in and of itself, and I think this is the parties had, as we indicate in our brief, the parties in the 99 agreement had modified their contract with the particular idea that a subpoena could be issued and enforced in federal district court. It was a decision of the neutral arbitrator with a majority made by the union panel member. Counsel for the defendants, both the signatory employer and Mr. Trohal here, have made much of the fact that they raised these issues in front of the arbitrator over the course of the three-month period before the May Kenosha hearings, and there was no response. Essentially, that's a denial. What the evidence shows is the employer did not do. They did not seek to set aside that award. They did not seek to take whatever action they deemed necessary to prevent enforcement of that award. And I think on the unique facts of the facts of this case, I believe that it's within this court's power to find that any challenge to that award has been waived. And we've cited the Raybon case and some other cases out of this circuit where parties claiming that they weren't signatory to essentially a damage award were subject to that award by not working to respond. I guess the main particular issue is that there is subject matter jurisdiction. The Sixth Circuit case the WBJK case is actually, our case is more on point because we actually have a collective bargaining agreement procedure that the arbitrator made a decision on as to whether that procedure was breached or not, and an award was issued ordering not damages but information. And for the national policies of arbitration, we believe this case is set to be determined and distinguished from the Loss Blankenship case. I'll save it for rebuttal.
Mr. Clark?
May it please the court, Jeffrey Clark, appearing on behalf of the defendant appellees, Dennis Trohal and JHT Holdings. Consistent with the court's request to keep argument limited today, Mr. Holmquist, who represents another defendant appellee, Active Transportation, the actual employer in the case, is not appearing here today since there is similarity in our arguments. For three reasons, Your Honor, we believe that the district court opinion dismissing this complaint should be affirmed. First of all, Section 301A of the Labor Management Relations Act, which is the only federal statutory reference found on the face of the complaint, does not provide either subject matter jurisdiction or any type of claim cognizable in federal district court over the Teamsters' claim against my clients, Troha and JHT. And we begin with the statutory language. 301A of the LMRA states it provides jurisdiction over suits for violation of contracts between an employer and a labor organization representing employees. It is undisputed, and the district court so found, that Mr. Troha is not an employer of the Teamster employees who are complaining in this action. JHT Holdings, Inc., which is a holding company as its name indicates, is not an employer. They did not sign the collective bargaining agreement. That's apparent on the face of the complaint, and as case law has indicated, as Judge Randa indicated in his district court opinion, the complaint alone frames the issue as to whether federal jurisdiction exists. The complaint attaches the collective bargaining agreement. Troha, JHT are not signatories to the collective bargaining agreement. They're not parties to the collective bargaining agreement. They are not mentioned in the collective bargaining agreement, and the collective bargaining agreement establishes no rights, no duties, no obligations of Troha or JHT. Therefore, this action...
You want us to go in conflict with your home circuit then, right?
My home circuit, Judge?
Sixth Circuit?
No, that's not our home circuit.
Oh, I thought you're
my home circuit's the Seventh Circuit.
Oh, I thought you were from Michigan. I misunderstood.
No, Your Honor, I'm from the Reinhardt Berner Firm in Milwaukee.
Wisconsin is still in the circuit. Judge Crosby will find a vigorous dissent should that be the case. I didn't know. But anyway, to the point of whether or not we have to create a circuit conflict to go your way, because the only circuit to address it is the Sixth Circuit.
Right. The Sixth Circuit, Your Honor, and I think that the decision that stands on its own, it affirmed a single district judge. There was a vigorous dissent, which I think is well-reasoned. The vigorous dissent is very consistent with, we think, the clear holding in a line of cases of this court, the Seventh Circuit. First of all, the Textron case, which is the U.S. Supreme Court in, I believe, 1998, indicated that you look to see has a collective bargaining agreement been violated, and the principle is if an entity is not a party to a collective bargaining agreement, it logically cannot violate an agreement it did not sign. Textron still holds, so we believe that controls here, notwithstanding what we think is an aberrational decision in WJBK. But more to the point...
It may be more clear to address Judge Flom's question. Do you think we would have to rule contrary and create a circuit split by affirming your position? Would it create a circuit split?
Well, Your Honor, in this particular case, we're contending the subpoena is not an arbitration award. And the dissent in the Sixth Circuit case recognized that subpoena is not an arbitration award and said federal courts, which are courts of limited jurisdiction, do not have federal question jurisdiction to enforce subpoenas. That's something state courts should do,
right,
which this district judge recognized, and we believe that is very consistent with, for example, the Brzezinski decision.
To be more plain, would a holding accepting that we take your position be contrary to the WJBK-TV case?
It would be contrary to the two judges on the majority in that case.
No.
It would be consistent with
the law of the circuit.
Right. It would be consistent with the minority. We believe that if you were to uphold Judge Randa, you're consistent with Textron, which is the law of the land in terms of the U.S.
Get back to my question. I think you've answered it. We would be contrary to WJBK.
Yes, Your Honor. And I believe the most recent pronouncement by this court, which we've called the court's attention, we recognized it, discovered it in some research recently, is the Brzezinski decision by this circuit in 1996, where a plaintiff named Jones was one of several people who purported to bring 301 actions. And this circuit held that since Jones was not an employee of the company which was the employer that had signed the collective bargaining agreement, and continued, and hence was not a party to the collective bargaining agreement, her suit, which in that case alleged infringement of a right of privacy, she claimed illegal surveillance by her employer. And I think the language of this circuit is very telling. Could not possibly be construed as a suit really arising under 301A. And this court went on to say, we must satisfy ourselves that the district court had jurisdiction over Jones's suit, and the final period, her suit presents no federal questions. And that's what Judge Randa held here. We think that was absolutely accurate. And for the reasons that we indicate in the brief, there's no suit seeking violation of a contract, so there's no jurisdiction. We think that's supported by Textron and by the Brzezinski, Loft, and Baker cases out of this circuit. Secondly, our jurisdictional arguments are not untimely. As Judge Randa recognized, subject matter jurisdiction can never be waived. And when this action was brought, and counsel's correct, initially there was a temporary restraining order basically entered that we did not have an opportunity to object to. Literally the next day, we were before the district court moving to quash that temporary restraining order, which the court did, and then we had a hearing on the merits of what the plaintiff then characterized as a preliminary injunction motion. At that point, we moved to dismiss the complaint on grounds of lack of federal subject matter jurisdiction and failure to state a claim on both grounds. Now, this 90-day limit for challenging arbitration awards, pure and simply, does not apply here because, as numerous courts have recognized, a subpoena is not an arbitration award. The plaintiffs, the Teamsters here, cite no authority for this, we think, unprecedented argument that a subpoena is an arbitration award. And in the Wisconsin statutes, section 788.12 and its companion 788.13 of our statutes in Wisconsin deal with how does one enforce arbitration award. Now, I've handled arbitration cases, judges. I know what a subpoena is, and I know what an arbitration award is, and they're two different legal animals. They're not one and the same. And our legislature in Wisconsin recognized that because in section 788.06, they specified a procedure to enforce arbitration subpoenas. And what you do is you go to the circuit court for the county in which you're seeking to enforce that subpoena, and you ask the circuit court, the state trial court, to give you relief. To this day, the Teamsters have not done that. They've not availed themselves of a potential remedy. So we have not waived our subject matter jurisdiction. And in fact, in Loft and Baker, this court characterized the defense really as one of failure to state a claim. So we look at that, Your Honors, as sort of flip sides of the same coin. We believe this complaint fails to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. Because it fails to state upon a claim upon which relief can be granted, under 301A, which is the only federal statute cited by the plaintiffs. They don't claim a diversity jurisdiction here, for example. They just claim federal question based on 301A. It follows that since 301A does not exist, Textron, Brzezinski, Loss, Baker, there is no federal question subject matter jurisdiction under 28 U.S.C. 1331. So on either grounds or both grounds, this court would be free to affirm what the district court did. And finally, the Teamsters have a potential remedy if they choose to avail themselves of it. And as Judge Randa recognized in the district court, and as the federal case law that applies points out, they could seek relief, as many litigants do who try to enforce subpoenas, in front of state judges who very regularly deal with enforcement of subpoenas. That doesn't require any interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement. It doesn't do violence to the principle that federal courts should adjudicate, you know, federal labor disputes. It's a simple question here. Were Troja and JHT signatories? The answer is no. And for that reason, we believe Judge Randa was correct, and we ask Your Honors respectfully to affirm his dismissal of this complaint.
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Thank you.
Mr. Wellington.
Just briefly as to the Brzezinski case, and I understand Judge Flom and Judge Kenney were sat on the panel of that case, and Judge Posner analyzed a claim that the plaintiffs had asserted arose under the collective bargaining agreement, but he looked to the contract and he said, under the Lucas Flower case and the other steelworkers trilogies and textile workers, we're looking to find a common law of contracts. So he made an analysis of the contract, could find nothing there. Here we have language. Here we have a dispute that rises under the collective bargaining agreement itself. Arbitrators so found. The assertion that state law, and we would claim that they're time barred under state law also, but that raises the issue of whether they will assert that because this matter involves the interpretation of the party's agreement on provision of information to arbitration, whether that's preempted under state law, and you would have to apply whatever rulings the federal courts had dealt on that. I do agree that if you uphold Mr. Clark's position, you will create a split in these circuits, and I think this case is more clear on its facts for federal jurisdiction to enforce this subpoena. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Our thanks to all counsel, and the case is taken under advisement. Mr. Wellington.